Hey everyone, how's it going out there? You guys holding up okay in the super freaking weird world right now? I hope that you're all safe and healthy and that you're remembering to like bathe and change clothes and stuff and you're building toilet paper forts with your children. I'm recording this in a hazmat suit. I joke, but obviously this is a very serious situation for a lot of people, and it's also serious business for arts and culture organizations. A lot of them out there are suffering without the ability to put on their live performances, and I hope all of you who are listening are doing what you can to support. You know, don't ask for ticket refunds. Donate money to the organizations if you can. Buy merch and music from artists. Stuff like that. Speaking of arts organizations, what you're about to hear is the first of two episodes about operas based on the works of the writer Alexander Pushkin. We made these with the Seattle Opera, which is a truly fabulous organization. We divided the episode up into two parts because it's kind of a lot of information. Episode one is really all about Pushkin and who he was, yada yada. So if you're already a Pushkin expert, you can skip ahead to the next episode and you won't have missed anything except for these super entertaining dulcet tones of me and my guests talking about the amazing literary game-changing giant. So, like, no big whoop. You can go on to the second episode if you want to. The second episode is about some of the gajillion operas that were based on Pushkin's stories. You can listen to the episodes in reverse order if you want to. You can listen to them both at double speed. You can slow them down, way down, and make a remix in your home studio. Because what else are you doing right now? Whatever works for you. However you listen, don't forget to subscribe to, rate, and review the show on iTunes, because when you do, an angel gets a bottle of hand sanitizer. By the way, this episode is brought to you by our sponsors, Encoda. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement.
Oh, I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And then he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
How to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical music.
I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Daisha Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I am Daisha Clay, and here with me today in the studio is Jonathan Dean. Hey, John. He's the dramaturg for the Seattle Opera, and you may remember him from such episodes of Classical Classroom as that one about the Steve Jobs opera. The Seattle Opera is about to begin their performances of Eugene Onegin, which is based on a story by Alexander Pushkin. And today, John is here to talk to me about Pushkin and Russian opera. John, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me here.
So before we get started, I have to ask you, for those listeners out there who don't know, and me, what's a dramaturg?
It's sort of a funny title. Not every opera company has a dramaturg, but I would describe my job as being, I'm charged with making sure that everybody understands what's going on. It evolved out of...
You mean like the audience?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and actually sometimes the people on the other side of the stage too.
Oh.
I was hired at Seattle Opera a billion years ago to perform the super titles, meaning to sit in the booth at every performance to make sure the right words are over the right character's head.
Right. So when you go to the opera, you can like actually read like what I would call subtitles, but what are actually called super titles.
Well, sub and super titles, there's the same thing, except one is below and the other is up above.
That makes sense.
If we did it at the bottom, that's kind of where the conductor's head would be.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess people like looking at those shiny bald heads
more
than they would at words. But yes, we've been doing super titles in opera in Seattle since the 80s, and pretty much everywhere in the world that's very normal nowadays, which gives opera audiences way more access to the drama of opera than they used to have.
When you know what's going on.
You sort of had to do some cramming ahead of time and try to memorize who everybody was going to say to, you know, who. And then good luck once the music started.
Mm-hmm.
And supertitles make that much, 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 much easier. Yeah. So opera has turned, it has evolved since that new technology really into something much more theatrical.
It makes it so that you, the listener, can play along even if you don't speak, say, Russian. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so the funny thing is I started doing that a long time ago as the musician, getting the right line over the right person's head. I worked on my languages and took over writing the translations, in the 90s. So if it's Italian or French or German, you're usually reading a translation that I wrote. I have never actually learned Russian. We don't do too many Russian operas.
Yeah.
So in this case, for instance, somebody else has written the translation. My job is just to make sure that it all happens and goes smoothly.
Okay.
But still, what a great story, Eugene Onegin, and what a great honor to be working with this amazing artistic legacy of this writer who he's one of Russia's greatest writers, but he belongs to the world. Sorry, Russia, you can't have him.
We all
get to enjoy this writer's work.
Yeah, I was really excited that we were going to get to talk about Pushkin today, because back in the olden days when I was doing my undergrad at the Evergreen State College, I studied Russian literature for a while. I just fell in love with it because it's like, I don't know, it's got this really particular flavor, this particular character to it that is just like you are curled up in a chair next to a fire with like a goblet of vodka on a winter's night and having all of the emotions known to humanity all at once. I don't know how else to describe it, but like I remember reading Pushkin and it just being this, there was something about his language that just made me get what it was like to be Russian
at that time. I know what you mean. It's very involving. It's somehow the rest of the world goes away and it pulls you into it.
It's so intimate.
Yeah.
Okay, so we should say like who he was and like when he was writing, which I think was like the early 1800s.
Yeah, right? The beginning part of the 19th century. Uh-huh. The operas, I've been calling Pushkin the wellspring of Russian opera because every great Russian composer made operas based on Pushkin stories, but that wasn't until much later. You know, it took him a few more decades to get organized musically.
It's funny because he became such a really just pivotal person
cultural
in the Russian
hero.
Arts, not even just literature, but in the Russian arts. But like he started out not so great. Like his home life wasn't great. He had kind of a bad time. He did a lot of like gambling
he was exiled,
and drinking and stuff.
Multiple times.
Right.
He died young.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. He was exiled to the south
and
of Russia.
Life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of lived a lot of the stuff that he was talking about. One thing that I read about him was that I think he got a lot of the fodder for his stories when he had been exiled by the Russian government for basically talking smack about them.
Yeah, bright young satirical poet writing snide, you know, comment. So basically writing for The Stranger if you're in Seattle.
Yes.
You know,
he was like Dan Savage or Lindy West.
Somebody
or something
shut that
like
guy
that.
Up. You're exiled.
Yeah.
Get out of this country.
So they send him away, like you do, I guess, at that time. And so he's like in exile for like 6 years. And then he finally, a news art comes in and is like, okay, I forgive you. We're still going to censor your work, but you can come back. But right after that exile, he was like staying. His family was kind of well-to-do, and they had this estate, and he went and he stayed on it after his period of exile. And there was this nurse that lived on the estate.
As we
apparently
say in Russia, nyanya.
Nyanya?
Nyanya is the nanny or the nurse.
Yeah, and so she, like, it's just the two of them. Like, everybody else has abandoned this estate. So he's just, like, on this estate with this old woman. And
who
she,
I think must have been a genius storyteller.
So she,
everything
that
I understand is that he learned from her how you tell traditional Russian stories.
Yeah, she tells him all of these folk tales. And then he kind of, like, I don't know. So I think she was maybe like the secret genius behind his.
Because he does a lot of those Russian folktales as verse, as these long narrative poems. So certainly the language and the poetry is his.
And now we'll take a quick break for some words about our sponsors. Grandpa, tell us again about how sheet music was back in your day.
Well, back in my day, we had to go down to a music store and buy paper copies of sheet music, and you had to hope that they had what you wanted. And if they didn't, you had to copy your friend's sheet music on notebook paper by hand. And that's the way it was, and we liked it.
Wow, it's crazy to imagine a world before Encoda.
We had an encoder back in the army. What does that have to do with sheet music?
No. Encoda. N-K-O-D-A. It's an app that gives you access to tens of thousands of sheet music scores. You subscribe to it, kind of like Spotify or Netflix, and then you can practice, play, and perform the music. You can even make notes on the sheet music and create playlists.
Well, duh. I've been using Encoda for years. I'm a senior citizen, not a junior. Junior. I downloaded it from the App Store for my free trial first, of course. What's next, kiddo? You gonna tell me about cell phones and microwaves?
Jeez, sorry. For a free trial, just download the Encoda app from your App Store today. Like Grandpa. N-K-O-D-A. This episode of Classical Classroom is sponsored by Maestro Classics. They're the creators of Stories and Music, which is this recorded series that they made for kids and families. It's won more than 50 awards, not to mention general adoration from the people who listen to it. It features the London Philharmonic Orchestra, and it takes those musical stories and it brings them to life. It's one of those things where kids learn while they're having fun without actually knowing that they're learning. And there's an activity book that goes along with it. It's a whole thing. Maestro Classics just announced a brand new recording in this series called Bach and the Organ. It's all about J.S. Bach, who you may have heard of on this very show, and it tells the story of his life while talking about the pipe organ, which, P.S., back in the day, was the most advanced mechanical instrument that had ever existed. And you can learn more about this album and the rest of the series at maestroclassics.com, and wait for it. You can also save 17% off of your order by using coupon code CLASSROOM. Yay! As you and I were talking about earlier, the other thing about Pushkin is that he was like this revolutionary because like Russia, they hadn't really had a great writer. They hadn't really had somebody who had been a voice in Russian about Russia.
Not in a way that really cemented the language and made it a literary language. I mean, it's funny because in English we take this for granted because we've got Shakespeare, mm-hmm. you know, who hundreds of years earlier made English into this extremely powerful organ uh-huh. for expressing everything imaginable.
Right.
But there's a lot of languages where the language is just a useful thing to get around your daily life. And you don't have to exert it to, mm-hmm. you know, consider the psychological complexities of all these characters and these dramas or the philosophical ruminations that you sometimes get to in poetry. But great writers take the language and figure out how to make it that flexible.
He like elevated mm-hmm. it to be a tool of art mm-hmm. in a way. Yeah,
and as I understand it, again, not really speaking Russian, I've sort of learned enough so I can figure out what every character in Eugene Onegin is saying uh-huh. at the various points in there. But his Russian is actually pretty simple. Everybody and once you understand Russian, you can mm-hmm. understand Pushkin, and it's the deployment of it that's where the genius is.
Yeah.
It's not that he's using really, really ornate or lofty or baroque
exactly.
or whatever language. It's just right to the point more clearly and more succinctly.
And I think that's what I loved about him so much was that it was like language that you could like cozy up to. There was nothing sort of alienating about it at all. It's really simple language, but there's something about
grand. It's not pompous.
Yeah.
It's not high flown or ornate.
Yeah.
Where in that period, a lot of poetry, let's face it, likes the sound mm-hmm. of its own voice.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Pushkin never does that.
Uh huh.
He has a very strong voice. It's very uh-huh. clear, but it doesn't have much of an ego.
Right. Yeah. It's just sort of there in service of the story. In a way. But that does something really lovely to it, where it's just like you as the reader very easily fall into the tale that's being told. Mm-hmm. We should get to some of the tales that are being told. But first, you told me about the opera and how they were going to perform Eugene Onegin. I got really excited because, of course, my love of Pushkin. But then you told me that Pushkin apparently not only inspired the opera Eugene Onegin, but like a bajillion other operas. Like basically everything he wrote, somebody tried to turn into an opera. Right? He kind of...
Yeah, I thought I had a pretty comprehensive list of all of the operas based on Pushkin, and then new things keep coming out of the woodwork that I didn't know about.
Which is kind of crazy.
There's dozens of operas based on Pushkin. He wrote a lot, but he died at 38.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not that much. I mean, like, his books all fit in a... Like, if you have the collected works of Pushkin, it's not hugely long. But every single thing has been turned into an opera at some point.
And then it wasn't just opera. It was painting and film and...
All the other arts, yeah.
Yeah.
Wellspring for artists ever since. And I would say probably, you may know more about this than me, but in the Russian literature, that all of the great Russian writers who came later in the 19th century...
Mm-hmm.
So Tolstoy of War and Peace and
Dostoevsky's
Chekhov, Gorky, all those people are kind of writing in forms that Pushkin started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and which is just amazing to me. It was like he sort of sprung a geyser, like and up through the ground come a bubbling crude. But it was art, and
but he was shot dead in a duel at 38.
But he was shot dead in a duel.
The fruits of all of that discovery. Yeah.
Yeah, like he never knew. He just had a messy life and died in a duel.
All this stuff is actually, as you say, he's writing about himself. Not only is the duel the pivotal scene in Eugene Onegin, where there's this, you know, all this fate of what's going to happen in this duel, and sure enough, it works out horribly. There's also one of the most important characters in Eugene Onegin is the nanny, who's this sort of gossipy old lady on the country estate who runs around and refers to all of the stories that she knows.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've read this. It's like it's all new to me again. So, let's back up just a little bit. So I think we've sort of contextualized who Pushkin was, and the fact that he inspired so many other works. We should hone in on some of the operas, since that's what we do on the show.
if our listeners do want to go and explore, I mean, just start with the Wikipedia page about Pushkin, find out a little bit more about this, because we could keep going on and on and on. You know that Pushkin was part African?
I did. Yeah, I read that he was related to an African lord.
A prince who was captured, enslaved when he was a kid, sold in a market in Istanbul and taken by somebody up to Peter the Great, who adopted him, sent him to college in Paris, and then he became sort of a Russian nobleman.
Whoa.
But had been born, we think, in Cameroon, although it's a little unclear exactly where the guy came from.
That's crazy.
And Pushkin was really, really excited about this and proud of his African heritage, used it in his poetry, and started writing a story called The Moor of Peter the Great, about his great-grandfather. He didn't finish it, but that didn't stop somebody from turning it into an opera in 1961. I did find that. I hadn't heard that opera.
it's still out there. All right, everyone, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. Be sure to tune in for part two of this two-part Pushkin podcast extravaganza. In the next episode, we get to the music. For more Classroom, go to classicalclassroomshow.com. Hear all of our episodes forever. Leave us a note. Find links to our sometimes attended to social media, and even make a financial gift to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to rate and review us wherever you listen. Thanks to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM, where we just moved into a new building and have to take off our shoes at the door because we're fancy like that now. Thanks to the birthplace of Classical Classroom, Houston Public Media. Thanks to Jonathan Dean and the Seattle Opera for their help in this episode. If you're a fan of opera, I encourage you to check out the Seattle Opera Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's really great, and Jonathan Dean is hilarious. Thanks to the official hand sanitizer of Classical Classroom, Hans's Handy San. It gets rid of germs and makes you smell like a dying bouquet of flowers for some reason. Thanks to me for saying words, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.